The much-anticipated Camp David summit between Obama and the Persian Gulf Arab monarchies isn't living up to the hype created around it. In a clear snub to Obama and his policies, four monarchs have decided to sit the summit out, with the Bahraini king much preferring to attend a horse show with the Queen of England. While Obama has hailed Saudi Arabia's role in the region, he has fallen short of inking a defense pact the Arab monarchs had hoped for. So can this summit still be salvaged, and what kind of an impact will its outcome have on Middle East's politics? Let's find out in this edition of The Debate. Well, let me start off by introducing our guest. Joining us from studios in Tehran is Robert Naiman. He's the Policy Director of Just Foreign Policy. And joining us from New York is former Assistant Secretary of State Richard William Murphy. Gentlemen, thank you very much for joining us in this edition of The Debate. Now, Mr. Naiman, I'll start off with you, if I may. As we've just mentioned, four monarchs, including U.S. allies, Saudi Arabia, Bahrain, and the UAE, are not in attendance. Now, even though they have sent their deputies who do wield influence, why the snub?
Well, this isn't so surprising. After all, the Obama administration wants this event to show that despite the unhappiness of the Gulf Arab monarchs with the potential coming U.S. rapprochement with Iran, the fundamentals of the U.S. relationship with these countries remain unchanged. These governments are the very ones producing the perception that the Obama administration is trying to counter. Namely, they're complaining and saying, you know, we're upset about the rapprochement with Iran and the possibility that the U.S. will get closer to Iran and maybe further away from us. So it's not shocking that the same people that tried to create the perception of distance would take small steps to undermine the Obama administration's efforts to patch over the differences.
All right, Mr. Murphy, I'll put the same question to you. Is the world reading too much into the no-show kings, or is it just perfectly natural for a king to prefer a horse show over a summit with his country's most important supporter and ally?
Well, I think we have to keep in mind it's not just their concern about America distancing itself from them. And I don't believe that's the situation at all. But it's their concern that Iran, with more access to funds, will continue to be a very negative and destabilizing influence over the entire region. They look back to 1979 and some early history in the region, but that concern is real, that this is all leading to a loosening up of controls rather than, as the Americans see it, a bringing together under control a state which has not had any supervision of its nuclear program from outside.
All right, Mr. Naiman, does this all boil down to Iran and its nuclear program?
Well, clearly there's more at stake here than Iran's nuclear program. It's already been, one could say, perhaps priced into the market that there is an expectation that the U.S. and Iran will, as the New York Times put it, probably get an agreement on the nuclear program. What these countries are concerned about, and we may dispute how to characterize this, but a change in a broader change in the U.S.-Iran relationship and a broader change in the U.S. relationship to the Gulf Arabs. And I think it's important to understand, you know, from the what may appear from the point of view of the Gulf monarchy as destabilizing the region, you know, Iran's negative influence, from the point of view of people in Iran, may seem as Iran's normal influence as a regional power. And it's not obvious why people in the West would privilege the former view over the latter view. I mean, for example, look at what's happening in Yemen right now. Clearly, the Saudi monarchy sees the normal order as that the Saudi Arabia should control Yemen, and anybody who has any other opinion should butt out. And this is what they're trying to demonstrate with their bombing and blockade. They're, you know, the Saudi Arabia is trying to do to Yemen what Israel tried to do to Gaza with its bombing and blockade. It's not surprising that governments like the government of Iran, the government of Iraq, would complain about this. Is that destabilizing that they complain about Saudi Arabia's blatant violations of international law? So you see, the Saudis have the assumption, the presumptions that they have about the proper order of things, this is something that should be questioned. And clearly, it's something that many in Washington, including many in the Obama administration, are questioning, the sense of entitlement that some in the Saudi government and the Israeli government, Gulf Arab governments have in their perception of the status quo.
Mr. Murphy, what do you say to that? Is it just a problem of these monarchies not being able to comprehend and accept the fact that the equations and rules of the game are changing when it comes to the Middle East, and it perhaps might just be a natural trajectory of things?
Well, I understand the thesis that it's a natural trajectory, but this just doesn't play in the ears of the Arab leaders of the GCC. They see Iran as planning from the first days of the Iranian Revolution to destabilize, overturn if possible, what were called the corrupt, incompetent, blasphemous governments of the Islamic world. And those words are still resonating, and they play into a situation which, before the revolution in Iran, there was a perhaps uneasy relationship between Saudi Arabia and Iran, but it was one of balance. There was some respect in Tehran towards King Faisal's leadership, and there was respect for the Shah's role and in Iran. And that was torn up as a set of assumptions by the revolution and the very malevolent words, which I say are still echoing in the ears of these monarchs.
Okay, but Mr. Murphy, putting that into perspective, though, what can Obama say at this summit to placate these monarchies?
Well, I'm sure he'll be reviewing the nature of our security relationship with the GCC, our intent to maintain it, to strengthen it where possible. There's not been any difficulties for them in terms of purchase of American arms or access to arms of the world producers. They have said they were looking for something in writing. I guess the implication of that is some sort of treaty relationship between America and the members of the GCC. That would involve congressional approval as a treaty. I don't know that that's on the table, but there's no lack of evidence or of assurances about the security against foreign military aggression against the members of the GCC. The record is plain. We've stood up for that consistently.
All right, Mr. Naiman, what the U.S. is offering to these Arab monarchies instead of a treaty is increased military sales, conducting military exercises, boosting maritime security, and even working on a security architecture, whatever that might be, according to reports we're getting at least. What do you make of that? Is that conducive towards basically being flexible enough to the changing dynamics of the Middle East and Middle Eastern politics? Or do you think it's only going to exacerbate the situation and tensions?
Well, I'm sorry to say that the United States government has a track record around the world of being quite promiscuous in its supply and sale of weapons to various unsavory governments that are gross abusers of human rights. And I fear that that is not going to change anytime soon. So there's nothing very spectacular about that kind of offer from the United States. It's something very easy for the United States to offer, something very popular among the military contractors, the politically influential military contractors that will benefit from those contracts. But the good news is I don't think that represents any major shift. I think that if the administration, as it were, gets away with that, then what that means is that essentially an accommodation is taking place, that the Saudis and others may be grumbling about the U.S. shift, but they're accepting that they have no alternative to the shift that's taking place. I think it's important to keep in mind that, you know, as the ambassador mentioned, this idea that the Saudis have this historical grievance against Iran dating back to the Iranian Revolution and characterization of the regimes as corrupt, incompetent, and blasphemous. If you take away the word blasphemous, which of course the United States government has no dog in that fight, but as far as being corrupt and incompetent, this critique of the Gulf era monarchies is widely shared in the United States, including in the US government. This is openly reported in the United States press, that the Obama administration is saying to these governments, actually the main threat to you guys is the fact that it's not any external threat, it's that you're not dealing with the problems in your societies. You're not dealing with the aspirations of your young people for freedom, for employment, for participation in power. And that is a message, obviously, that these leaders don't want to hear. We saw that there was a deep confrontation between the United States and the Saudis over Egypt, where the U.S. tried to accommodate the democratic election of a Muslim Brotherhood government in Egypt. And the Saudi government worked actively to undermine that policy, including encouraging the military coup and the massacres that followed against the nonviolent protesters against the coup. So this is a deep rift between not just this US government, but the opinions of many Americans about these governments in the region. And that friction is not going to go away.
Okay, gentlemen, hold on to your thoughts. Let me cross over to our social networking websites and see what our viewers are saying about this. Take a listen.
Nothing much expected. Obama's just making sure these fat tyrants and Zionist tools stay loyal to the U.S. hegemonic policies. Dog and pony show. Come on, people, wake up. Conspiracy against Iran. Arab leaders will obey Obama. Nothing but more troublemaking as usual. Nothing different. What can anyone think of this other than it's nothing other than a dog and pony show, meaning it was intended to bring the savage bomb-happy tyrants to some sense and perhaps to realize this childless obsession with Iran and throwing temper tantrums as a result of killing innocent people of another Arab nation is ludicrous, definitely not Islamic. Planning to kill some more innocent people in the name of Islam. U.S. oil, Persian Gulf summit, a summit to counter Iran and to destroy Yemen. Where are the Zionists? When will they join the party?
There were some of those comments from our viewers as they're continuing this conversation on our social media pages. Now, Mr. Murphy, let me get back to you on a point that Mr. Naiman had raised, as well as one of our own viewer comments there, is this obsession with the threat of Iran when it comes to these Persian Gulf Arab monarchies. Isn't it high time that they moved away from that external threat and start to realize what's happening within their own borders? Like, for example, as Barack Obama welcomed the Bahraini Crown Prince in Camp David, Bahrain confirmed that it has decided to extend a controversial prison sentence for prominent human rights activist Nabil Rajab. Now, will Obama discuss these regimes' own track records when it comes to democracy and human rights?
Well, he certainly got the leadership irritated throughout the GCC by the statement he made to Sharq al-Awsat less than a week ago, that there were definitely some changes, developments that needed to be made within their countries to improve the stability of the entire area and to encourage the hopes of the, particularly the new generation, that they will have a role in governance, in participation in their own country's decision making. So he's aware of this. What can be said publicly versus private conversations, we'll see in the next few days what comes out of Camp David. But he's actually gone in public in a way which has upset, shall we say, the leadership in the GCC.
But Mr. Murphy, I'd like to run with the example of Bahrain, so to speak. For example, the U.S. has supported the Bahraini monarchy throughout the uprising that began over there in 2011. It seems that the U.S. views it in its interest to keep these monarchies in power, no matter how totalitarian they may be.
Look, it's a constant struggle to balance between one's values and one's interests. Our interests in Bahrain are very plain. It has been a very good friend, very supportive of the military presence of the American Navy and its operations in the Gulf. And there are other strands to the relationship, but that I'll just leave it at that. It is in an American interest. We have seen things happen in Bahrain which are against our values. We just, as a government, have to balance between interests and values. That's all I can say.
Well, Mr. Naiman, when it comes to the U.S. relations with dictatorships like that in Saudi Arabia or Qatar or Bahrain, it seems that interests have always taken a precedence over values.
Well, yes, of course, obviously. But I think it's also important to point out that the interests of the United States, this is not a fixed thing. This is something that people fight over, and sometimes it's some things that people exaggerate. So, for example, there's actually a debate in the United States. How important is it to base the Sixth Fleet in Bahrain? It's the ships are at sea. The headquarters in Bahrain is an office complex. Yes, it's very nice. It's very convenient for the U.S. Navy to have this friendly port where the soldiers can go and drink alcohol and do whatever. But is this really a core national security strategic interest of the United States to have the Sixth Fleet based in Bahrain? Or is it just something convenient for the U.S. Navy in the sense that these guys are our friends? So it's always important to interrogate these things when someone says, well, we have to do X because that's in the United States interest. It might actually certainly not be in the interest of the majority of Americans. It might not even be in the long-term interest of the groups that predominate in shaping U.S. foreign policy. This idea of the, you know, the private criticism versus the public criticism is also something that needs to be interrogated. So these Arab monarchs are offended because the United States pointed out, President Obama pointed out what everybody knows, that they have unfulfilled aspirations of their populations, and that's a bigger threat to their long-term stability than Iran, and he should have said that privately. It's interesting that these governments, there's a great parallel between these government and the Israeli government. These governments are happy to publicly criticize the United States. They do that all the time. But if the United States publicly criticizes them, then they become big crybaby drama queens. Clearly, you know, the United States is a superpower here. These countries aren't the superpower. So we should at least have the same ability to criticize these governments in public as they are exercising.
Okay, we're going to have to leave it there for now. Time's gotten the better of us. That was a policy director with Just Foreign Policy, Robert Naiman, joining us from studios in Tehran. And joining us from New York was former Assistant Secretary of State Richard William Murphy. Gentlemen, thank you very much indeed for a very interesting edition of the debate. From me and the entire team here in Tehran, it's goodbye.